Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, welcome to another special episode of Popcorn Podcast with Lee and Tim, where we're talking to Matt Brown, director of Freud's Last Session.
I'm Timmy Bland, movie buff.
And I'm Lee Livingstone, entertainment journalist.
And we love to talk all things movies. But first, let's talk about Freud's Last Session, which is set on September 3, 1939. The world is on the brink of a Second World War, and two of the greatest minds of the 20th century get together for a monumental debate over the future of mankind and the existence of God. So not very big topics at all.
Big themes. Freud's Last Session is directed by Matt Brown with a screenplay by Mark St. Germain and Matt Brown based on the play by Mark St. Germain.
Freud's Last Session stars Sir Anthony Hopkins as neurologist Sigmund Freud and Matthew Goode as famous author C.S. Lewis.
Boston-born Matt Brown first made a living for himself in Hollywood as a jobbing screenwriter, but many of the projects he was working on actually got stuck in development hell.
He reassessed his trajectory, decided to focus on making the movies he really felt passionate about, and so The Man Who Knew Infinity was made, starring Dev Patel and Jeremy Irons, about a pioneering Indian mathematician.
I think everyone's heard of The Man Who Knew Infinity, right?
Yes, an incredible cast to back up one of his first films.
Yeah. As a double major in English and political science, Brown is obviously interested in life's big questions and the heart of the human condition, and that is evident in this film that he makes.
Freud's Last Session is an imagined conversation between two intellectual greats. There is actually no evidence to suggest this happened, but it's an intriguing idea nonetheless.
It is. Matt Brown has said of making this film that we live in an age that is so ideologically polarized, where everyone is stuck in their own tribes with no real dialogue and no intellectual curiosity. I want to make a film for all audiences that can be emotional, thought-provoking, and creative.
Now, with that in mind, Brown joins us today to discuss how he convinced Anthony Hopkins the role of Freud was right for him, how to hold on to our beliefs while still respecting differing opinions, what a crazy concept that is these days, and how he put that philosophy into practice while collaborating with playwright Mark St. Germain on Freud's Last Session.
Let's take a listen.
Forgive me, but why would you come here to see me if you disagree so passionately with my views?
To make you realize that you're wrong.
Hi, Matt, and welcome to Popcorn Podcast. I'm really thrilled to speak to you about your film. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Now, this is an imagined meeting between two of the most interesting minds of the 20th century and probably this century too, let's be honest. But how much of the real men did you want Anthony and Matthew to bring to their performances?
Well, I think we wanted to have a pretty high degree of authenticity in terms of the characters themselves. So, yeah, I think there was a lot of research done, and we tried to adhere to who they were and what we could glean from other people about both of them. But that being said, you know, it is a fictional meeting. We don't know if it actually happened or not, and it gives the opportunity to kind of lean into, you know, some more creative. We don't know what the conversation would have been, you know, or where it would have gone. So there is some creativity involved with that.
Is that a fun playground to be in? Obviously, you have the source material of the play that it's based on, but how comfortable were you exercising creative license within that idea that it wasn't an actual real meeting, but you kind of have that sort of ability to have them say your words in a way?
It's a little terrifying, I'll be honest with you. But yeah. I've been through it once on another film that I did with, you know, less well-known people, Ramana John and Hardy and Man of New Infinity, but they were real people, and you try to stay true to the characters and to who they were. In this situation, it was a little more daunting because my dad is actually a psychiatrist and works in, you know, he's got a whole community, and his partner in life, she's a psychiatrist. And, I wanted to make sure that they were okay with everything, and I hadn't veered too far off course. And you know, then there were the screenings we did originally for the psychoanalytical societies, and that was somewhat terrifying as well. But overall, I think, like with Infinity, they have felt like it's been pretty well respected. You know, you felt like those were the people that they were portraying. It was fun because my dad, being a psychiatrist who knew quite a bit about Freud and his colleagues, you know, that a couple of the points they made to me were, one was that Freud actually had a really good sense of humor. Mm-hmm. And I think that Hopkins really embraced that, and it comes through, I think, especially when you're sitting with an audience on the big screen, you can really feel that a lot. And the intellectual curiosity that Freud had, I think, also something that was true, and I think also comes through pretty well.
Speaking of Hopkins, I read that some reworking of the story happened before Anthony would officially sign on. Can you share what he was looking for in the script, and was he always your Freud?
No, he was. Well, we originally went to him, I could be wrong, but I think this is how the events went. It was because this has been like 6 years in development. So, you know, but I'm pretty sure we went to him and he was unavailable because I think he was in the throes of preparing for The Father at the time.
Right.
And he read it and didn't really give many notes or anything, just said no. So it's about what I expected, giving it to like the greatest living actor.
Yep.
And then Christopher Plummer signed on to it. I really love Christopher so much. And it was really, really sad when he passed. And I was really hoping to do the film with him at the time because we had been working on it some. And then after he passed, I knew it needed some more work. So I sort of delved into it and did some more work. And then they said, who do you want to go to? And I said, well, how about we go back to Hopkins? And I don't know what I was thinking. And then miraculously, I mean, he said yes. So there was that. And then there was a development period with Tony, and we, you know, I think it was over the course of about a year of really him opening up and sharing with me his feelings and thoughts about it and reworking stuff, you know, that as one does as they're preparing for a film. So, and that was incredible because he saw this as an opportunity to share a lot of himself over the course of a lifetime. You know, you could draw on so much because it's somebody looking back at their life. I felt that really contributed to the whole thing, because it really, to me, in many ways, is about us coming to terms with our mortality.
Yeah, absolutely. And perhaps it was cathartic for Anthony to play in that space as well, with such an illustrious career and have such rich sorts of material to kind of play in that space of looking back and reflecting on life and your place in it.
You know, actually, the Ardmore stage, Ardmore, where we shot the film in Ireland, he was there 50 years earlier shooting his very first film, A Lion in Winter, on the same stage. So this was, wow, a return 50 years later, whatever that was. And I remember him walking in the door that day and he's just looking around. And he's like, this is just everything coming full circle.
Well, you know what? I'm glad he changed his answer from no to yes.
Yeah.
He was probably very grateful for that full circle moment for him. Matt, we live in a world where differing opinions are constantly shouted at each other in one-way tunnels, that echo chamber, right? Have we lost the ability to have intellectual discussions and accept differing opinions like Freud and Lewis?
I would argue that we, like as in the actual people, haven't. The people that tell us how to think and what to feel, I would say, have. So, you know, it's the difference between critics and audiences, I guess.
Right.
And that's real. It's real, you know, and I feel like the media today, there's just these agendas that are just so strong and so biased. And I don't even know that half the people that are saying the things they say believe the things that they say. They're just on that side, and that's where they're getting their paycheck from. But I think that most people generally are smart enough and intuitive enough to be able to take some good from another point of view or some other side, and there is more of a middle ground. And that's what this film was trying to say, is that we don't have to cave. We can still believe what we believe, but we can actually enjoy and respect the debate, or you know, who the person is we're debating with, and despite their flaws, because we're all flawed.
Because the conversation is quite playful between the two at times. So it shifts that tone. And that's it's quite enjoyable for an audience to be witness to such intellectual conversation, but they're also tormenting each other about it, but they're still shaking each other's hands, so to speak, at the end of it all. I think it's really striking.
Yeah, thanks. I wanted people, when they finished the film, whether they agreed or disagreed, they could go out and have a coffee or a beer or whatever it is and just talk about things that they'd normally be too scared to talk about or discuss the film.
Just to build on that, do you think there's something for audiences to learn from Freud and Lewis's conversations about life, or is, I guess it's open to interpretation, but, or is it more a cautionary tale about extremes and enlightenment?
Interesting question. I don't know that there's going to be any new revelations that anybody hears here. I mean, it's not, how can we know? I mean, what more is there to be said about what we don't know? I don't know. What's novel about it is this idea of watching somebody who's right near death, examining their life and going through those emotions and thinking back on their life and their personal flaws, and having somebody else hold them a little bit accountable and be able by the end of it to actually see and witness this change in these two people that have actually come to grow and appreciate one another. And because that's what's new about it. That's what's interesting, I think.
Speaking of what else is new about this project, I guess, and speaking of differing opinions, what was the push and pull like of adapting someone else's work with that person, with Mark, who wrote the play?
You know, it was a long journey towards getting this kind of film's hard to get made, period, you know, and as a director, you're kind of also a producer and you're also kind of a writer. It's not an easy one to get made. And with Mark, I mean, it was challenging because he's a playwright and, you know, his words are, were beautiful and the play worked beautifully as a play. And then we're trying to turn it into a film. And, you know, there's some push and pull with that. But Mark was pretty wonderful. So at a certain point, you know, I probably took over on it and, you know, worked with actors and, you know, they have their points of view and what they want to bring to it. And I think that's what also makes it special. I mean, film's incredibly collaborative. It just is. And it just takes so many different people, your production designer, your costume designer, your cast, your everybody. That's the beauty of it. It's also the living hell at times.
The beautiful living hell that is filmmaking. Yeah. Just building on that adaptation process, what did working within the medium of film with this story allow you to do with it that a stage play couldn't?
Well, I think that's also a good question. I think, for instance, the PTSD that Lewis experiences, it's one thing to say when you walk into a room, I have PTSD, and then you talk about what happened. But like, I mean, how far do you want to go with that? I mean, in the film, I can show a couple of scenes briefly that tell you everything you need to feel and showing by showing it and feeling it. And you really know this person has PTSD. And then that factors into your thinking about everything else that goes on for the rest of the film. And it's a shorthand that it allows, I guess that's the difference in a way. You can do it as theater. It's just, this isn't theater.
Now, naturally there are constraints with what you can do within the, well, three, four walls of a theater production, but what constraints or challenges did you come across within the medium of film that are unique?
Well, I mean, we were stuck with two people in a room that's telling a central story and then having to go outside of it. And it is disruptive to go outside of it at times. And it sadly, I had to cut some scenes that were some of my favorite in the film, because you just need to stay with them in the room more. And that was something that I think if you see the film on the big screen with an audience, it probably works better because you're in a more of an emotional communal journey with it. But it is the challenge of balancing going away from them and then coming back. And it's the yin and the yang of that, I guess. It's a tricky thing, and it requires patience, and it requires patience from an audience in a day and age when everybody's got zero patience and they're watching TikTok. So it's asking a lot, but I think it's worth it for this kind of a film to have that patience and to try to understand what made these people into who they became. It's all part and parcel.
Now, speaking of the attention economy, your films often deal with big ideas in a world of blockbusters and franchises or TikTok. How do you choose your projects? What speaks to you?
I mean, I'm drawn to the bigger themes. It's probably just from my own personal, I experienced a lot of loss, a lot of unfortunate incidents in my life with friends who I lost. And as a result of that, I've sort of examined my own mortality at different times. And I've spent time as a caregiver, and it's something that, you know, I guess you work out that in your art, and my art happens to be trying to do these films. And so I'm drawn to these kind of stories, which are inevitably more difficult to get made longer and less money and shorter schedules, but we do what we love. So.
Absolutely. And that's all you can ask for, right? As an artist. So I'm glad that you're still fighting the good fight in that way. There's always a place for those tentpole films, but we need that equilibrium in our lives and have conversations about life like your own. I want to talk about Matthew and Anthony. We've got two actors at the top of their game going head to head. Did you ever have times where you were just so mesmerized and forgot that you were directing them?
I mean, probably I did, for sure. I mean, there was just moments where, absolutely. There were some moments where you're just like, this is just too good to be true. And then there were other terrifying moments that were like, oh my God, we got to do this all over again. it was, you know, the thing about this was that because we had such a short schedule, and we're talking, Anthony's, you know, 85 years old, brings its own challenges, and he's fearless and incredibly generous. But what I had was two very kind human beings, basically, as well, that are creatively incredibly generous and incredibly talented and amazing. So that is also helpful. I think without the first part, this wouldn't have happened. We needed to have a really safe space to be able to work and have people fall down and make mistakes and start over again. And then you did have those moments where everyone's hugging afterwards and like, oh my God, that was awesome. You know, so
that's awesome.
It was a bit of all that. But, you know, those guys are so skilled, and they both have a background where they, you know, not so many takes each. They don't even like to do a lot of takes. So everything's happening real fast anyway, which was good on a schedule like this as well.
Yeah. So time constraints, not many takes. Does that mean that you didn't have much of an opportunity to rehearse before? What was that process or opportunity like?
I mean, I didn't on my last film either. I mean, rehearsals sort of just feels like a non-existent thing to me in independent film. So way we kind of did it was I spent a ton of time with each of them individually before we even got there. And we really worked through all the script questions and all that, and really felt strong about what we were trying to do. Mm. And then we would spend generally the first part of the day more just sort of blocking and working through rehearsing, sort of semi-rehearsals, but I wouldn't say like full-blown rehearsals, because they both wanted to save it for the moment when the camera was rolling, and I like that as well. So we worked it out a little bit at the beginning of the day, and then the end of the day would be a mad race to complete it.
You've worked with Dev Patel before. Sorry, a bit of a shift here.
Sure.
And we just had him on the show, actually.
Okay. Get out,
Yeah, I love talking to him. Have you seen his directorial debut, Monkey Man, yet?
I'm going tomorrow.
Brilliant.
He has a premiere here tomorrow, and I'm going to go and I'm going to see him. I can't wait, actually. We've been in touch a lot. I mean, I know what he's gone through with the film. I'm sure he talked about it at length with you.
I can't wait for you to see it, and there's much to take away from it, but he's managed to find a way to sort of produce a blockbuster film with some of the most insane, guttural, visceral action that you'll see recently, but it has such substance and has beautiful cultural stories and nuances to tell. So I'm sure you're really excited to see it and then to talk to him about it, but it's making some serious noise at the moment.
Yeah, I'm very happy. They put their heart and soul into it for a number of years on that. So it's exciting to finally see it come to life. And I mean, you know, Dev's got incredible intuition and just, yeah, amazing instincts. And he's a terrific actor, obviously. So I think he's probably very ready for this to come out.
Yes, I think he is. He said he also needs a bit of a holiday, but hopefully not for too long, because I want to see what he does next.
Yeah.
Matt, in wrapping up, I've got two final questions for you. What is next? I know this project took many, many years. Are you looking at what's next, or are you having a break? What does that look like for you?
Had a few projects over the last couple of years that are coming to a head and trying to see which one goes. Actually been talking to Dev as well. This one project, I think, hopefully is going to happen this September. I'm knocking on wood.
Great.
Yeah. So Scott Free's producing it. It's something we've had in development for a very, very long time. So it should be fun.
Amazing. Well, all the best with that.
A little bigger, a little more commercial. So that'll be fun too.
Awesome. It's all about balance, right? Now, to wrap up, we're all about celebrating the joy of cinema here at Popcorn Podcast. Bit of a big question, but I'll let it simmer with you. Could you recount an experience at the cinema or a moment on film that has brought you joy?
Oh, yeah. I can think about like 100 different ones. I mean, I guess when I think about like the real cinematic experiences were when I was young. I was probably like a 13-year-old fan going to, like, I think seeing Raiders of the Lost Ark when the giant boulder was coming down, and I was like in the theater, like everybody else, just being like, what am I watching? And this is so incredible. Or Close Encounters. I guess it was those big Spielberg films when I was really young in the theater, which I guess is how kids are now when they watch all the Marvel stuff or something. But those ones had, they were pretty special. So,
absolutely beautiful answer. Thank you so much, Matt. I've really enjoyed talking to you, and congratulations with your film.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Well, I wholeheartedly disagree.
Well, of course you disagree. You have to disagree. Otherwise, the entire structure of your childish faith would collapse into a rubble.
So as Matt Brown says, Tim, we can agree to disagree. What a concept. A differing opinion doesn't diminish our own values or feelings.
Do you think that's directed at us?
Yeah, I mean, I often think that when you just come at me with those such strong opinions, Tim. My God, anyone would think you're a film critic.
Anyone would think we're living the dream over here, but respectedly so, agreeing to disagreeing from time to time.
Only with respect, Tim.
Only with respect. But you're wrong about
so many things.
So many things. And how great it is that he had the courage to take on Anthony Hopkins' opinion about the script and work with him to come to this fascinating final product.
Yeah, it's really inspiring, actually, to see a creative putting the true meaning of collaboration into work, and also championing a filmmaker like Dev Patel, who we also just recently had on Popcorn Podcast.
Yes, he was very excited about that, and he was really excited to hopefully check out Monkey Man very, very soon. So I just love that sort of world of artists supporting artists.
Yes, more of it, please.
More of it.
Freud's Last Session is in Australian cinemas from April 18.
And as always, friends, thank you so much for listening.
And we'll catch you next time. We are now on YouTube, guys, where you will find our latest celebrity video interviews. Simply search Popcorn Podcast with Lee and Tim, and make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a single one.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.